Welcome to True Talk on WMNF 88.5 with Ahmed and Samar. Samar is traveling. It's me in the studio. And today is Thursday, March 9th. And we are in our holy month of Ramadan. So we're going to be talking about Ramadan. What does that mean? Especially at a time when there's this genocide going on in Gaza. And as we reflect on this holy month, maybe we'll also take some of your phone calls and answer questions on about what is Ramadan and why do Muslims fast all day? What is the meaning of the spiritual month? So that and more when we come back right after this short music break.
رمضان بك أرجي لقاء قرب ربي بك روحي وقلبي قدس
Ramadan Mubarak, Ramadan, the month of forgiveness. This is Ahmed, your host of True Talk. If you're listening to us live, we're broadcasting on WMNF.org as well as 88.5 FM in Tampa, Florida. We're also, you can also find the podcast on any of your podcast platforms by looking up True Talk. So if you're listening, wherever you're listening to us, Ramadan Mubarak to you. Happy Ramadan. Muslims started fasting, observing Ramadan on Monday. So now we are in our fourth day of fasting. And on this episode today, we're speaking about the month of Ramadan. Also reflecting on what's happening in Gaza. But first, what is Ramadan? And I'm going to also take some phone calls later on because we haven't been doing any live shows recently. So if you're listening to us on the podcast later, sorry you can't join us. But you can always email us your questions or comments at dj@wmnf.org. Well, when we're on the air. But after the show, you can email us at truetalk@wmnf.org. What is Ramadan? Ramadan is the name of the month. It's like, I don't know, January or February. It's a name of a month. And it's a month, like the Jewish community, Muslims also have what's called the Islamic calendar. There's a Hebrew calendar, there's a Muslim calendar, and the Islamic calendar, I don't know, what is the year in the Hebrew calendar right now? It's like 5,000 something. In the Muslim calendar, the Islamic calendar, it's 1,400 and, let me look it up online, and I'll give you the answer, but it's in the 1400s. 1,450 some years ago is when the Islamic calendar started, and it marks the migration when Prophet Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam, migrated from his hometown of Mecca to another town that's a few hours away by car now, and called Medina. And that migration marked the start of the Islamic calendar. So now we're in the year 1445. So that's 1445 years ago that migration took place, where Muhammad and his followers were forced out of their town of Mecca, and they sought refuge in Medina, in another town where they actually, the Muslim community thrived and grew from there. And then Islam spread throughout the world. So the month of Ramadan is the ninth month in this Islamic calendar. The Islamic calendar, different from our, Western calendar that we follow, or the common calendar that we're following, runs based on the rotation or the orbiting of the moon. So it's called a lunar calendar, similar to the Hebrew calendar. It's also a lunar calendar. This is how the monotheistic religions, that's the calendar that they followed, based on the moon. So the difference between a lunar calendar and the cycle of the moon than a solar calendar is that the lunar calendar is around 11 to 12 days shorter than our calendar, or the calendar that we all go by. So every year, the month of Ramadan actually starts about 11 days, 12 days earlier than the previous year. So this year, it started on, what was Monday? The 8th, I guess. I don't know. So it started on Monday, which was, I'm sorry, the 11th. Last year, it actually started somewhere around the 20th. So, or the 21st, 22nd, somewhere around there. So every year it's going to go back 11 days, meaning next year it'll start around March 1st. And the year after that, it'll be in February. And then a few years from now, it'll be in January. And it keeps doing that all year. It circles around, cycles around, or circles around the whole year. So, and the way every 33 years, it actually resets. So 33 years from now, we'll start again. Ramadan will start in March. So it's kind of interesting holiday or interesting religious observation that no Ramadan is ever the same. Like every year it starts different. It's in different season. So at some point, Ramadan was in the summer, like in June and July. And now it's in the winter where it's colder. And that does make a difference because of the time that you start fasting, where you basically don't eat or drink. So for Muslims during the month of Ramadan, what's different is that Muslims will not eat or drink anything, consume anything from before sunrise, like about an hour, hour and a half before sunrise, until sunset every day for 30 days. Can't even drink water. That's a common question. How about water? Can you drink water? No, we can't drink water. We can't drink anything. People who smoke or chew tobacco, which you shouldn't be doing anyway, you can't do that either. You can't vape. You can't chew gum. You can't take lollipop. Somebody sent me a text message saying you also can't have sex. So there's no sexual intercourse, no like that type of pleasure. During sunrise and sunset. However, after that, you can do those things. You can eat, you can drink, you can have relations with your spouse, which these are things that are normally allowed. They're normally what's called in Arabic halal. Halal is just basically Arabic for kosher. It's something that's permissible to do, eating, drinking, as long as it's not pork and as long as it's not alcohol, religiously, you can consume and eat whatever you want as long as it's according to Muslim dietary rules, which are kind of similar to Jewish dietary rules. Because at the end of the day, they actually come from the same source. I mean, surprising to some, despite what's happening in the Middle East and despite what you might hear from some of these Christian televangelists, that the root of all the three monotheistic religions is the same. It's the same God, same prophets, same scripture. It's people who divided themselves. So actually, as Muslims, we believe that the same God of Moses and Abraham and Jesus and Isaac and Jacob, and he's the same God as of Muhammad, and the same God that revealed the Torah and the Gospels is the same God that revealed the Quran. And just like how Jesus came with an updated version of the religion, I mean, we believe that Jesus, peace be upon him, did not come with a new religion. He actually just came, it's the same religion of Moses. He just came to either, you know, evolve it or update it. So the same way that he came with a New Testament, Muhammad, we believe, came, Allah sent him, God sent him, with the final testament. So in the Quran it says, and by the way, this is not a religious show, but because there's so many questions and I happen to be Muslim, and I every Ramadan I like to do a show about Ramadan just to kind of inform our listeners and to share what this month, this special month, means to us. That's why we're sharing. And some of the, obviously, you can't talk about Ramadan without discussing the religious aspects of it and the spiritual aspects. So, excuse me. this is the problem. In Ramadan, you can't drink water. So, you know, the producer is gesturing, hey, you know, drink some water. And I'm like, no, I can't drink water. It's Ramadan. You know, you have to just clear your throat manually. So this is kind of what you deal with. And you kind of appreciate the idea of, you know, the need to drink water, you know, being grateful for water, being grateful to be able to eat. But this kind of schedule changes so much around. But before I talk about the schedule, in the Quran specifically, it tells us that the reason that God has prescribed, it's like a prescription kind of thing. It's not a punishment. It's not, it's actually seen as some sort of treatment or as a prescription, like something to heal you or to make you better. The reason that fasting has been prescribed to you, as it was prescribed to those before you, that's what the verse in the Quran says, is in order to attain something that's called in Arabic taqwa, or some sort of, like, it's a type of God awareness or God consciousness, to be aware of God and to be aware of things beyond yourself. And it's, I guess it's seen as a type of spiritual cleansing for the soul, for your being, and even a physical cleansing. It's like a physical detox. If you think about it, what do we do like all day long? You just eat and drink and just keep putting things in our body. A lot of times it's harmful things. Most of the time it's junk food, processed food, things that are not good for our organs. We have all this disease that's happening because of, you know, the chemicals and the bad food that we're consuming. But imagine a time when, you know, where you come to a specific time, because normally you're eating, you're not eating when you're sleeping, you're eating when you're awake. Now during waking hours, most of the waking hours, you can't eat anything, you can't drink anything, you can't consume anything, and you can't even, like, you know, pursue your desires or, like, have pleasure in that way. And a lot of people or a lot of scholars have explained that, you know, it's a way to control yourself or to discipline yourself because, I mean, human nature is that you want more. Humans, by their nature, they can, you know, tend to be greedy. They can't have enough. They always want more, you know. Even like if you go to a buffet somewhere, have you ever seen it? I mean, I haven't gone to a buffet in a while because I just can't control myself sometimes. There's so much variety. And then you can only consume so much, but you want to taste it all. You want to try everything that's on the menu. And a lot of times you just pile the food on and you kind of taste from a little bit of everything and don't eat most of it. And you see that a lot. And however, if you go to a restaurant and you order one thing off the menu, that oftentimes you'll take like half of it to go because it's too much. However, it's just, that's the thing, that the self always wants more and wants things. And, you know, we enjoy eating, like going to lunch and having coffee. Oh, God, about the coffee. These are like simple pleasures in life that you enjoy every day. And now all of a sudden you can't do that anymore. So what does that mean? And no one is like, there's no like Ramadan police running around. Nobody's like watching me everywhere I am. I can eat if I want to. Like it takes a type of self-discipline or a type of restraint. Only God knows. God knows what I'm doing. At least, you know, I believe in God. You may not, but no one is policing this. It's kind of a contract, a secret, or like a contract between myself, or Muslims look at it as like an agreement, a contract between the Muslim and God. And only God can actually judge or enforce that contract, because no one else will know if you are or you're not. I remember as a little kid growing up, and it used to be kind of a challenge that parents would do, hey, are you going to be able to fast all day this time? And usually to get like young kids into it, they'll say, why don't you try fasting until lunch? And I remember I just, you know, had a hard time getting to lunch. And then, you know, I'd be sad I didn't make it. And then, you know, if you make it through lunch without eating anything, then, you know, parents are like praising you just to encourage you to be doing that. But, and then, you know, with other kids, you'd ask them, hey, are you fasting today? Or are you cheating on your fast? Of course, it's not something that anyone is going to necessarily hold you responsible for. So nobody's going to know. There are ways to get around it. So it is a kind of special relationship that you have. But beyond that, I guess when you're hungry all day, I notice when I'm hungry, okay, the first couple of days are a little difficult. So it can be difficult. Like, you know, but then once you get into it, your body adjusts and you're actually more mentally aware, more mentally alert. And you sleep less, I noticed, during the month of Ramadan. So in Ramadan, there's also these additional prayers and worship that happen, especially at night. And people spend a lot of time, especially observing. I'm not saying all Muslims are doing this. Are there Muslims that violate the rules of Islam? Yes. Are there Muslims who don't follow everything to the T? You know, in Islam, it says, you know, pray five times a day. Are most Muslims praying five times a day? Probably not. Maybe a great number of them are, but does everybody know? It says not to eat pork. Are some Muslims eating pork? Possibly. Are some people drinking? Yeah, sure. They're not supposed to drink alcohol, but they're doing it. But that's not the point. But even people who drink alcohol, I noticed, or don't observe certain things. But when it comes to Ramadan, they'll do Ramadan. It's kind of like it's almost like they even look forward to it. And I know some people back in the day, they go out to drink, they do things that are normally not permissible for a practicing Muslim. But Ramadan comes, they'll stop their drinking. They'll say, oh no, Ramadan is coming. I can't be going out. I can't consume this type of stuff. And they'll actually discipline themselves. They won't even, you know, violate those rules. They'll just be an observant. They'll even go pray. Some people call them Ramadan Muslims, like at the mosque, the mosque-going Muslims that go there on a regular basis. And then all of a sudden, during the month of Ramadan, I guess it's like kind of Easter and Christmas, like everybody floods the churches because now it's like the religious time. So they call them the Ramadan Muslims. You know, they just show up during Ramadan. And then they observe it and then they disappear. Some will continue after it. But the whole idea, I guess, what, you know, one of the teachers had taught me before is that if you can discipline yourself and cleanse yourself spiritually, purify yourself, get closer to God, and through for a period of 30 days, that actually starts building habit. You get up every morning, you pray, you discipline, you control yourself, you don't curse, because part of being in Ramadan also is not to get into fights, not to curse somebody out, not to backbite and talk about people behind their back. It's to actually improve yourself. And if somebody's able to do that for a period of 30 days consistently, that actually becomes a type of habit that many people come out of Ramadan as a different person. A renewed beast. Some people have made their transformations in Ramadan. And some people didn't make a difference. I was talking to somebody earlier today, And I said, you know, oh, I'm going to talk about Ramadan. And then they gave me all these tips. And of course, I said, well, you know, my audience is not necessarily Muslim. They may not get all this stuff. And they're like, well, it's still interesting to share some of these views with them. But one thing that they remind me of was the hadith. The hadith is basically a saying that the Prophet said that's not Quran. So the Prophet, peace be upon him, Muhammad brought two things. One was the Quran. The Quran is basically sacred text, sacred words, sacred verses from God directly, verbatim, we believe, sent to Muhammad. In fact, this Quran was started to be revealed to Muhammad when he was at the age of 40 and until he died. So he died at 63. So the Quran was revealed over a period of 23 years. It wasn't just a book that was given to him and said, hey, go read, you know, go teach with this manual. It was words that were revealed to Muhammad from God direct verbatim to Muhammad over a period of 23 years. And you may be asking, well, how did God communicate to Muhammad? Well, he communicated to him the same way he communicated with other prophets, we believe, through the archangel Gabriel. It's the same one that's mentioned in biblical, in the Bible itself. So Muhammad, in his this is not something that's in the Quran, but it's in one of his teachings. He said, the loser is basically, and I'm paraphrasing, like the person, don't be like the person who loses Ramadan or is a loser in Ramadan, that all he got out of it was just hunger and thirst. If they went through the whole month of Ramadan and all they felt was just the only thing that they got out of it was being hungry and thirsty, well, they did not reap the real benefits of Ramadan. They didn't actually practice Ramadan in the right way, because at the end of that month of Ramadan, if one does it correctly, they should be a renewed person. Spiritually, but also physically. They should come out of that month being, you know, being able to discipline themselves. Even being able to discipline their ego. Part of that is to be, you know, humbling yourself, to be forgiving with others, to control your tongue, what you say to others, you know. So that's sometimes hard in the current climate that we're in. Hard with the, you know, with the Twitter and, or, you know, formerly known as Twitter, with social media, with everybody wanting to just be punchy and spunky and have things to say about everything. And it's hard to do that also when you see atrocities happening around the world, especially like we see the genocide in Gaza. There was a lot of talk about that there was going to be a ceasefire in Gaza. In Arabic, it's pronounced Gaza. So if you hear me say it that way, that's just not me having a speech impediment. That's just me saying it in the Arabic version. So there was a lot of talk that, hey, it wouldn't be... There's got to be a ceasefire before Ramadan. It hasn't happened. And now Netanyahu is pressing and saying that they're going to invade Rafah, you know, where everybody's been just crammed in there in the southernmost part of Gaza with walls on the southern end. Imagine just being pushed all the way to the limit to the wall. 1.3 million people now trapped there and nowhere to go, and they want to invade them. 35,000 of which have already been killed. Over 70,000 have been injured. You're talking about over 100,000 casualties, the majority of which are women and children. And now they're fasting. Now they're in the month of Ramadan. And many of them are actually have already, before this month started, they were, you know, starving, especially in the north of Gaza, where aid is not allowed in or very limited or very difficult to get aid there, even food. And this is something that's been going on for 5 months. And at the beginning, the Minister of Defense said that they're going to cut off all fuel, all water, all electricity. And now they've cut off food. They're starving them. Even the State Department is saying that people are starving to death. Children are starving to death. So way before this month started, children and people, civilians are being starved to death because of what Israel is doing. And this, at the EU foreign affairs minister just even said yesterday at the United Nations
or in some world form, that Israel's using food as and starvation as a weapon of war. And this is against international law. The dilemma that we have is that, of course, Biden and the administration is saying that this is unacceptable. We have to get the aid in. But they're not willing to do anything to do that, except they're saying that they want to build a pier. And I know I'm ranting about other topics here. By the way, if you have any questions or comments about what I said about Ramadan, you can call us at 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. Or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. Sometimes I get these emails or messages saying that we should have more live call-in shows because you want to interact. Today is a live call-in show. Please call us, 813-239-9663. But please stay on topic. If you're not on topic, we're not going to take your call. Or we're not going to keep you on because I want to, you know, discuss this matter. So... And I think Bernie Sanders kind of, you know, he's been speaking out about this. Even though he was delayed in calling for a ceasefire, he's being forceful now, saying that aid to Israel and weapons to Israel need to stop until that, well, it needs to be stopped until they stop what's happening there, the murder of these children and the genocide. I don't know if he's actually called it a genocide himself, but many people have already said that it is. Even the International Court of Justice had said that there's plausible genocide happening there. They gave specific orders for Israel to follow, which they have not followed so far. But the United States has done some airdrops of aid. A drop in the bucket. It would not feed that many people. And it's very expensive to do airdrops of food. Imagine... America is funding this war by providing the weapons. And they can't even get food in to Gaza, that they have to fly food packages to drop them into Gaza. And they're doing it in cooperation with others. Well, guess what? Some of these food packages that were dropped, because how do you drop food packages from an airplane? You drop them with a parachute. Some of these parachutes fail to open. And they've killed like something like 5 people so far. Imagine, even when you're trying to deliver aid, you're dropping a huge packet or pallet or whatever from the sky. And the parachute does not open. It's going to come down like almost like a missile from that speed, from the elevation. And it's killed like over 5 people. I forgot what the last count was. And the food that has been delivered by some of the international community, Israel, on several occasions so far, has bombed the aid once it lands. I mean, how evil do you have to be to even bomb the food once it lands? Biden is now talking about building a pier, a temporary or a floating pier off the coast of Gaza to provide aid. People are skeptical. How about just, and then people within Gaza saying, we don't want you to build a pier or to drop aid. We just want you to stop supplying our murderers with the bombs. It's like somebody is a mass murderer, a mass shooter, and instead of stopping them, you go and try to tell the people, oh, can we get you some food? You know, maybe they're hostages or something. Can we get you food? And meanwhile, you're supplying the bullets to the shooter. How about stopping the shooter? How about stopping the bombs? How about stop funding those bombs? So for me, Ramadan, this Ramadan is very unique. It's difficult. And, you know, as we keep reflecting on what's happening to the people of Gaza and the atrocities being committed there, the difference with it is it's being live. The whole world is watching. The whole world is watching, and no one is stepping in to stop it, because the United States is allowing it to happen. And the Biden administration is allowing it to happen, which is really, really troubling. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And our email is dj@wmnf.org. If you're listening to this after the show, you can, like on the podcast, you can email me at truetalk@wmnf.org. So like my morning, my days are upside down. Of course, I'm, you know, not eating. I have to wait until, so sunset now, if you look it up, it's around 7:40 p.m. So that's when we break our fast. Usually I'll break my fast with something like water and dates. You know, these dates from a palm tree. It's like a date fruit. And you can eat right away. You can eat whatever you want. Some people break their fast with fast food. Some people break their fast with other things. I like to eat something lighter. Some people that smoke, they, you know, they break their fast with a cigarette or whatever they, you know, whatever their vice is. But I break my fast with water, and then I like to wait a little bit. I do my sunset prayer. Then I have a, you know, a snack. But I'll have my meal like around 11 p.m., you know, because there are these special prayers during Ramadan that are called Taraweeh prayers. And they're usually like, you know, an hour or over an hour. And if you eat a lot, then you get really sleepy and you get kind of, you can't really stand up and have the stamina to stay. You just want to go to sleep if you eat a lot, especially if you haven't eaten all day. So Stephen is calling in. And if you want to join Stephen, you can call us at 813-239-9663 as well. So I'm going to take some phone calls, and starting with Stephen. Stephen, you're on True Talk. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Oh, I was listening to the show and everything, and, you know, it got me thinking. But I'm going to tie this into the religious aspect of things. But you know how in America we don't have universal health care?
Right.
What would a person rather do? I'd love to get free universal health care if I see a doctor or a dentist anytime, anywhere. I don't see a bill and it's free. Or I could buy a major medical at $500, $600 a month with high copays and deductibles and, you know, and probably still have bills after I see a doctor or go into a hospital. Obviously, I'd rather take the free health care instead of trying to work and having to make money to keep the private insurance. Now, I look at if someone was trying to get to God and have eternal favor with God Almighty, if it was offered to me for free, where I don't have to perform, I don't have to keep a religious performance system or observe days, months, and years, but it's by a free gift of grace, right, by faith alone, wouldn't I rather have that? Than try to work my way where I got touch not, taste not, don't look at this, don't do that, don't go there, don't look at this. Why would I want to try to work my way to God, which would never be good enough, by the way? But God has offered his free gift of grace, which is a free gift. If I had to do anything for it, it wouldn't be free, of course. And by faith alone in that gift that God is giving me, I have eternal favor with God.
Where does that work? I mean, doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. Are you able to get free food just sitting and not doing anything?
Well, God's grace is perpetual, eternal favor.
No, I'm saying in real life, because you use the example of the health care.
Well, no, I use that the health care example where, just like if somebody said,
hey, do you have children? Do you have children?
No, I don't.
Okay, do you know people that have children?
Yeah, I do.
Right. And can they just do whatever they want and not do anything? And they'll always have the grace and the love of their parents, no matter what, even if they kill somebody else or do anything else?
A parent will always love his child. Or
even if they're a mass murderer and they kill them and they kill their other members?
There is, yes.
What about somebody like Hitler? What about somebody like Hitler? Does he... No matter what he does, he can just have this grace?
Well, that's where it brings me to the point of an Adolf Hitler, or maybe he had a son or a daughter, got in trouble, murdered somebody, whatever. Mm-hmm. That brings me to the point, if God can make me eternally righteous by what he did for me instead of what I'm trying to do for him, is my point.
Yeah, but I think you're just basically in a different way, you're trying to proselytize that by accepting Jesus.
By accepting that
will be the salvation. Yeah, I appreciate your point, but it's, I don't, you know, well, that's a certain belief. that's a certain belief that you have. There's nothing wrong with that. But again, doesn't get to the topic of Ramadan, what we're talking about. You know, and again, it's people have different beliefs. People have different religions. And we respect all religions. That's one way to look at it. But it's not my choice. In fact, as Muslims, we actually believe that in Jesus. Muslims do believe in Jesus. And Muslims believe in the Jesus that came from was born to a, from a virgin birth, from the Virgin Mary. It's actually in the Quran that Mary was a virgin. And Mary, that Jesus was a miracle birth. And then sometimes people ask, in fact, well, shouldn't I make Jesus special? Of course, Jesus is special. And we love Jesus. But God also says, like in the Quran, that creating Jesus out of one parent is similar to how he created Adam. And in fact, Adam is creating Adam out of nothing without a parent at all. Is actually a bigger miracle. And, you know, if anyone deserves to be the son of God, it would be Adam because he created out of nothing. However, again, not to debate religion, but as Muslims, we don't believe, we have the same kind of concept as the Jewish ideology in what God is. God is a creator. Everything else is a creation. And that God, that creator, that created everything, does not share power with anyone. He's not begotten and he does not beget. So it's a true, as it's more of an Old Testament, I guess, belief of what God is. Tom Leonard says, Catholic and Lent. As a Catholic man, I've given up cursing for Lent. And then he also says, Netanyahu makes that very difficult. Much gratitude and blessings to you. Yes, thank you, Tom. Yeah, I know what you mean. Now, yes, and that's why in the Quran it does say that, hey, fasting has been prescribed to you as it was prescribed to those before you. Those before you means the Christian and the Jewish communities. They also have a fast. The Jewish community, they fast on Yom Kippur. Some people say Yom Kippur, some say Yom Kippur. I've actually gone to a synagogue during Yom Kippur and spoke there. It was a nice synagogue in Clearwater. They got a lot of heat for that afterwards from, you know, the political side of the local Jewish community. But it was nice. I enjoyed it. We have a lot more in common than we have differences when it comes to these. The burial rites are similar. The eating rites are similar. There's so much more in common. And that's why what's happening in Palestine now, this conflict, this is not true Judaism. True Judaism and Jewish communities had coexisted with Muslims in that same space for centuries, for 1,400 years or 1,300 and some years. It's only in the past 100 years that this conflict started happening, specifically in the past 75 years when these European migrants that came from Poland and Germany and Russia and other places had no connection to the Palestine, the land of Palestine. They were migrants. They came over and they had no connections to the indigenous Jewish, Arab Jewish communities that lived there for centuries. Because there are indigenous Arab Jewish communities that have lived throughout the Arab world for centuries, including in Palestine, including in Jerusalem, and they've coexisted. And in fact, they first had rejected this idea of the Zionist movement that was coming from Europe, that was coming from Eastern Europe. So they coexisted. It was not a matter of religion, because those religions coexisted. And Islam coexisted with those religions. In fact, Islam coexisting with these religious communities, the evidence of that is that those religious communities and their churches and their temples have survived for centuries under Muslim rule. Now imagine what what the Israeli government is doing now in Gaza. They're wiping out mosques, mosques, churches. They're wiping out any footprint of anything Palestinian, not just the Muslims, but also the Christians. And they're doing it in a record amount of time. So Tom, yeah, already sent that message. I have another. By the way, you can call us at 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. Peter writes, the Gaza terrorists did their evil deed. The definition of terrorist I was taught in my early school years is a poor man's substitute for war. So they accomplished what they achieved, I'm assuming. Now we have the rich and powerful retaliating. I believe this conflict between these two peoples has been going on for quite some time. When will the final blow from the rich side end? Question mark. This is a horrific situation. When this current situation somehow dissipates, will this just keep going on forever? I don't think it's going to keep going on forever. I think that this current conflict and this huge disproportionate response, or what Israel is doing in Gaza, is really hurting Israel's image around the world and exposing them, especially this current government, for what it is. I think Netanyahu and these gang of fascists around him are the biggest threat to the future of Israel. And they're the reason why, anti-Semitism is skyrocketing, because people are confusing it. Because when you're waving the flag of the Star of David and calling yourself Jewish and bombing children and starving them to death, people, and then, you know, you're using and misusing religious rhetoric, and you have rabbis that are justifying the rape and murder of these children and of women, and to just flatten everything, that sends the wrong message. I don't think these are the true representatives of Judaism. I see people, young people, especially in groups like If Not Now and Jewish Voices for Peace, I think, in my opinion, that's a more accurate reflection of what Judaism is, having compassion for others, standing up for justice, making it a better world, even if you're speaking out against your own people. And that's why it's so courageous, and so, you know, there's hope in the world when you see young Jewish people like the groups, If Not Now, if you don't know them, you can look them up online, and Jewish Voices for Peace. They're speaking out, and they're saying we reject Zionism. Zionism, they say, is Jewish supremacy, or white supremacy, or white settler colonialism. It's just whatever you want to call it. But these people are using the cloak of religion, of Judaism, to push a genocidal agenda. That's very dangerous. And when I talk about this, and when others talk about it, and we criticize what Israel is doing, it's not because they're Jewish. If a Muslim nation is carrying out genocide, we would be equally vocal. So it's not about, it's about the injustice that's happening. It's so obvious. It's just so disheartening. It's so upsetting to see something so obvious that people keep just being confused about. It's pretty simple. A group is mass murdering another group, ethnically cleansing them. And it's been going on for some time. Now we're just seeing the peak of it by the thousands. I mean, this is just the amount of damage and destruction that's happening there, just unacceptable. And it's happening. This is not, and they keep comparing, some pundits will use this excuse. Well, look at what the United States did in Japan. Look at what the Allies did to Germany. This is not, we're not in World War II right now. This is 2024. they established international institutions like the United Nations, like, you know, conventions like the Geneva Convention to stop that, to say never again. And now it's happening again. However, for some reason, some people think it's never again for just a specific group of people. Robin writes, I just wanted to say I really appreciate you sharing your religion with us. Thank you so much, Robin. I'm happy to do so. I don't want to sound like I'm proselytizing, but I think my religion is beautiful. I think it's a religion of peace. By the way, the greeting in Ramadan is Ramadan Mubarak. It's like, you know, blessed Ramadan that you say to your colleague or your neighbor. And, you know, be patient with them because it's not easy. I mean, waking up, normally you wake up, you have your coffee, you have your routine. Now that's all kind of, you know, upside down. You're eating at night. You're not eating during the day. You have to watch your behavior. Another thing that we actually, that the imam at the mosque reminded us of, during that month, you have to lower your gaze. What does lowering your gaze mean? Lowering your gaze means that you try to not look, especially other things that are maybe attractive, you know, the opposite gender or whoever, whatever, I guess, you find attractive. You try to avoid gawking at. Obviously, you know, you're not going to be watching like lewd things online. And so all that has to be cut out. You have to like, and try doing that when you're surfing the internet. I mean, there's so many ads or just watching TV. So in fact, I actually don't even watch shows during Ramadan or try to limit it. I mean, a lot of times when you're watching a YouTube video or something else will come on and you have to kind of look away. Having that kind of self-control to say, you know what, I need to focus. Because the idea is that distracts you from getting closer to God and purifying yourself. And unlike earlier, I think a lot of these things are actually what God commands us to do. I mean, when I was younger, I thought it was kind of like, okay, these are rules, you know, and why are there so many rules? But if you actually look at it, as I get older and I look back and I actually reflect on some of the things that God is asking us to do in our faith, I mean, I don't know about your faith, but in our faith, they end up actually being things that are helpful to us. Eating less, limiting how much food we take, that's actually good for our body. Giving our stomach a break, that's actually healthy. And I think now there you see all these health benefits, scientific health benefits of fasting. Prophet Muhammad, even outside of Ramadan, was fasting on Mondays and Thursdays, twice a week. You now see people and scientific research that proves that fasting more than, you know, at least once a week or twice a week is actually very beneficial to your body and to your organs. They could eliminate disease. Try it yourself if you want to. I have some people that have been on hold for a while. I'm going to go to Mike from Sarasota. Mike, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Let me take you off a speakerphone.
Yeah, please.
Hi, I was wanted to follow up on a comment you just made.
Sure.
About the Israelis bombing mosques.
Yeah.
In Gaza. I heard, and I think this was on perhaps Amy Goodman the other day, that the Israelis are also, they shut down universities, and then they started to destroy the universities.
Yes,
and I just wanted to check with you and find out if that's a fact, because if that doesn't prove ethnic cleansing, and cultural cleansing, I don't know what does. When you go into a place and you destroy universities, what you're trying to do is you're trying to destroy the culture. So I wanted to check with you and find out if that's
correct.
A fact. Have you heard about that?
Yes, I've heard about it. You can find it online. Almost every university, and there's not that many in Gaza, have been destroyed. Almost all schools have been attacked. And some of these universities have some of the oldest, like, manuscripts and books and things. Anything to preserve their heritage. It's literally wiping their culture, their ethnicity, their roots off the ground as if they've never existed. Because what is a community? What is a people? Except their history and their books and their culture and their artifacts. When you erase that, there's nothing left. And they're basically literally going in with these huge bulldozers and tilting the ground, destroying things, and changing the face of the map in Gaza and the geography of it. It's disgusting. I think it's deliberate. And like you said, I think it's a very clear form of ethnic cleansing. Thank you, Mike, for calling in. Patrick from New Reddington Beach.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. I'm enjoying your conversation.
Thanks.
A lot. 77-year-old man, Vietnam veteran. What's going on in in Gaza is the most distressing thing in my life, and the fact that nobody's doing anything about it. First and foremost, the president of the United States, why he can't chastise Netanyahu. Who's really controlling Joe Biden? Who's calling the shots? Is that our lobby or really rich Jewish people, and he can't do anything about it?
I think, I mean, it sounds like he says, I think Joe Biden himself says he's, you know, he's a, even though he's not Jewish, he's a Zionist. He believes in this stuff. So I don't know if it's just he was impacted by that, but obviously, and thanks for calling in, Patrick, obviously there are special interest groups that have that lobby for these things, but, you know, Joe Biden is free to do what he wants. I mean, he's an old guy. What's going to happen to him? He's almost, you know, he's so old. Like, do the right thing, Joe. How do you justify this support unless you actually truly believe this nonsense? You know, some people now are calling him Genocide Joe, and you don't want that to be your legacy. 35,000. He says, oh, the red line for him is, oh, we can't have another 30,000 dead Palestinians. And now in Israel, on TV, they're actually making fun of that and saying, oh, Joe Biden is telling us the red line is 30,000. So if we just go to 29,999, we get a pass. I still have, yeah. 4 minutes. Okay. Thank you. We're going to, by the way, guys, listen to the scoop after the show, which is coming on after this. And this is True Talk on WMNF. I have a couple of other text messages and/or emails. David is saying, you're correct, Netanyahu is no more religious than Trump was when he held the Bible upside down. They are right-wing extremists, and Biden is a hypocrite for supporting Israel. Okay, sometimes when I get these text messages, I can't really, for some reason. Okay, let me see. Peace is smart, war is stupid. Okay, thanks so much. Pretty straightforward for that message. I don't know whoever sent that. Thank you for that text. We have another text here. Speak peace in every language. Okay. Yes, we're speaking peace. And this is the station of peace, and this is the show of peace. In fact, Islam means peace. Islam is an Arabic word. It comes, you know, it's like saying salam, or it comes from the word salam, or in Hebrew, I guess it would be shalom. It means peace. Our greeting between each other as Muslims is assalamu alaikum. Jewish people say shalom alaikum, something like that. So it's actually the same greeting because it's from the same God. And but Islam means submission. And the idea is that by submitting to the will of God, following God's commandments, one will find peace. Internal peace, external peace, societal peace, because we following the same rule. What does God want from Muslims? Wants them to be, you know, have God consciousness, treat the others as you want to be treated, be good to your neighbor, be good to society. You know, similar, follow the Ten Commandments. Don't kill anybody. How many people have they killed? I mean, the commandments were given to Moses, right? Thou shall not kill. So if you're carrying those commandments and you're saying that you're carrying the Star of David on the flag on these tanks and you're just shooting at people, and then you say, oh, why don't they like the Israelis? Because you're killing them. They don't. It's not because of your religion. And don't confuse that with anti-Semitism. They have nothing to do with each other. They would also criticize you if you were no religion. But because you're killing them, that's why they have a problem with you. This is WMNF Tampa. The Scoop, which is produced by WMNF, is on next. And have a great weekend, everybody. Make sure you tell your friends and neighbors Ramadan Mubarak, Ramadan Kareem. And I actually, somebody sent me a message just saying thank you. Well, you're welcome. Thank you for that. And I don't think we're going to be talking about Ramadan next week, but maybe we will. If you catch this afterwards, you can email us at truetalk@wmnf.org. and the countdown is happening. Have a great weekend, everyone. And I'm going to scoot over here and play the scoop.